We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. I'm your host, John McCackney, joined, as always, by Mario Puig. We are recording this live stream, so not really recording it. We are fully live streaming here just a little bit earlier than we normally do, obviously with the Thanksgiving holiday coming up on our usual record date of Thursday. So thanks for bearing with us here. If you've been paying attention to the RotoWire NFL channel, the guys just had the waiver wire show just a little bit ago, and now you're being treated to more fantasy football goodness to get you ready for Thanksgiving week's slate of NFL action. So Mario, how are you doing on this fine Tuesday?
Oh, it feels weird recording this early, but it's nice to be recording, I guess. What about you?
About the same. I'm not jet lagged because I flew up the coast yesterday. So,
You're at home. Okay.
I literally home. Yes.
I thought your dad was doing Thanksgiving at your apartment for a second there or something. I didn't realize what you were. Okay. That makes more sense.
I can certainly picture us trying to pull that off, and like the turkey would be on fire. Everything else would be fully microwaved. And it'd probably just kind of end with us like somehow ordering a pizza.
If I didn't have other people witnessing me in like the anticipation of shame for it, I would just do that.
I mean, it's low key a respectable move.
If no one was looking, I would just do it every day, probably.
I can 100% respect that. But speaking of Thanksgiving, we've got three games that we're going to be treated to this year on Thursday. So why don't we get things rolling here as we do every week, roll through the entire slate of games. We got the Bears and Lions, and this one pretty tricky, especially as we are set to record here. Justin Fields obviously suffers that rib injury in Sunday's loss to the Ravens. And of course, Tim Boyle was the starter for the Lions in a game where they almost beat the Cleveland Browns on Sunday. This one, of course, being hosted in Detroit, as is tradition. So what are your thoughts here? I mean, it's America's going to be kind of treated to one of the ugliest possible matchups you could come up with this season here on Thursday to kick things off. But I think it might be competitive, but in a very like rock fight-ish type of way.
A grim way. Yeah. Well, the other thing is there's more drama behind this Thanksgiving game, maybe any other ever. And I don't know what's going on with this Nagy stuff. Some website called patch.com is saying that he's going to get fired after the game. And I don't know what Patch is. I don't know why they would fire him after the game. I don't know why you'd say happy Thanksgiving, Matt. We're firing you. I would have just done it already, I guess, or I would have said, to hell with it, who cares, we'll do it at some other point. But leaking before the game, that's crazy. Anyway, it's brutal there. If it's Dalton, and I guess it seems like it's going to be Dalton, right? So him with no Robinson, if Robinson is out again, and the defense being as bad as it is, you would almost consider the Bears the underdog, right? Like it would, I guess if Tim Boyle's the quarterback, maybe that undoes it.
Right.
That guy's incredibly bad, by the way. And it's egregious that he's so much as on an NFL roster or ever was. Like he was playing at, what was this, Eastern Kentucky? Eastern Kentucky. and he was putting up numbers like they did in the NFL in like the 1930s, back when like everybody ran a wishbone and you were a good
throwing
quarter.
A forward pass made you a witch.
Yeah, and if you were a good quarterback, if you threw 8 touchdowns to 22 interceptions, like that's what his numbers look like at Eastern Kentucky. And for, he's not a runner. I've never been more confused about why a player is in the NFL than Tim Boyle, let alone actually playing in a game. So, yeah, never mind. If he plays, I don't know if DeAndre Swift could carry the team single-handedly in that situation, no matter how bad the opponent is.
Right, and not only is Tim Boyle obviously a non-viable NFL quarterback, John, but beyond Swift, they have nobody in that offense.
He had 12 touchdowns passing in college compared to, 12 to 26 was his career touchdowns to interceptions, and he averaged under 55% completed in his first three. Okay. Anyway, sorry, that's crazy. I love DeAndre Swift. I like how bad the Bears defense is without Khalil Mack, without Akeem Hicks. And Swift, I think he's kind of in the zone lately. Everything else is stupid and wrong with the Lions offense, but he's in the zone. So if the Lions win, it's probably because he went completely insane.
Yeah, that's kind of their only path. And then if Dalton kind of goes Dalton mode Dalton, not against the Ravens fashion. Dalton, of course, looked good on Sunday. Jim Nance was really leaning into that on the broadcast. Like, well, here's a bunch of other times that Andy Dalton has ripped out the Ravens' hearts before. Would you like to see them? And then, so they were really leaning into that.
AJ Green, right? It was pretty much AJ Green.
Well, the Tyler Boyd year to knock the Ravens out of the playoffs in week 17 as well. Yeah, I mean, there is a litany of examples of Dalton really doing it to me. So he's my number one enemy. But that's besides the point for this one. But Andy Dalton in non-Ravens games over the course of his career, pretty bad. Again, he also doesn't have a ton to work with here when it comes to the Bears. So I do kind of lean with you where it's possible that the Lions come out and win this one and get their first win for Dan Campbell on Thanksgiving just because of the Bears playing as poorly as they are and being as dysfunctional as they are.
I don't know. I think I do like the chances of Swift to have a huge game, and that's kind of cool to think about. But I really don't see a single thing going for the Lions otherwise. Like Tim Boyle, I almost feel the need to write a legislator about this because this is insane. I feel like I'm losing my mind in the middle of this. I'm obviously like an obsessive person, and right now I can't think about the podcast anymore. I'm like, I gotta find the answer to this Tim Boyle mystery.
Who did this?
There's some kind of conspiracy here. I don't know what it is, but he's too bad. You cannot possibly win an NFL game with this guy. That's I think what I'm going with.
Okay, that's totally fair. We'll see if the Bears can hold up their end of that bargain on Thursday. Next up, we got the Raiders going up against the Cowboys in Dallas. This one is another game that I think as of a couple of weeks ago was pretty much consensus circled as the best game that we were going to get on Thanksgiving this year. I think it still could be, but a lot of the luster gets taken off when there's no Amari Cooper and obviously CeeDee Lamb suffering the concussion in Sunday's loss to the Chiefs. That certainly changes things as well here. So we're looking at the Cowboys 7.5-point favorites, even with those injuries in mind. So what are your thoughts on this matchup here as the Raiders continue to kind of struggle down the stretch?
I guess 7.5, 7 seem like a lot of points to me, if only because I think for it to be a full score, you kind of need a bad game out of Derek Carr. Maybe that's exactly what happens. I mean, he hasn't looked so great for the past, month or whatever it's been. And Dallas's defense isn't exactly stout, but it can be dangerous at times. So, the field's shrinking on the Raiders offense without Henry Ruggs. And if they're not going to establish DeSean Jackson as sort of a replacement in that capacity, then it makes them worse in a different looking offense than they were when Carr was actually playing well earlier this year. So if they can get DeSean going, I would like their chances a bit more. And you would like that, I think, to clear out some room for Darren Waller and Hunter Renfro, both of whom have seen the field shrink on them. Renfro has been getting pinched quite a bit the past 3 weeks because Carr just started leaning on him that much more when Ruggs was gone. But it's not going to work. And if they keep trending in that downward direction, then Dallas's defense looks pretty dangerous for them. So I think I definitely expect a bounce back game from Dak. So I don't want to take the Raiders to cover that 7 exactly, but if I'm going to go with Dallas, it's basically because I think Dak is too good to have two games like he had last week. And I guess that's what I'll go with.
Yeah. I mean, I can completely understand where you're coming from with that one. I mean, Dak Prescott led offense, super, super dangerous, even if the receiving core isn't.
Yeah, I guess if CD is in, I should say, if CD and Cooper are both out, I guess that's a little different of a Dak.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we could see a line movement if, you know, maybe just like a half point or something. But if Lamb ends up getting ruled out, a quick aside for you, when it comes to the Raiders in this passing game, what do you do with Bryan Edwards at this point? Like, I think this year is a lost cause, essentially. But how do you look at him for Dynasty or for redraft next year?
I think he's good, but like he's playing a role that can't really work in this offense. They're asking him to run farther downfield than they should. And in specifically like the capacity where he last week he would have occupied Chidobe Awuzie. So he'll draw the shadow corner from an outside from another team. If they got an outside shadow corner, if they have a Darius Slay, that guy's on Bryan Edwards because that corner doesn't go to the slot on Hunter Renfro. I should say, I guess unless Darren Waller is positioned outside, it'll always be Edwards who gets that shadow corner. So in this game, I don't know what Dallas might do with where they place Trevon Diggs and Anthony Brown, but if they want to shadow someone, it'll almost certainly be Diggs on Edwards. So for a guy who has realistically no shot of being higher than third in the target rotation, if only because of the kind of quarterback Derek Carr is, but also I would say because they are making him run further downfield than he has the speed to. In addition to that, he gets the toughest coverage every time. So I think he's good, but admittedly, as long as Derek Carr is the quarterback, and if they don't lower Bryan Edwards' depth of target, it's just going to be he keeps getting like all the most thankless tasks in the offense.
Yeah, that's a really good breakdown there. I hadn't really considered that in addition to the way that he was being utilized, he was also drawing most weeks the toughest corner matchup of any of those Raiders pass catchers. So yeah, that makes a difficult decision all the much worse when it comes to Edwards. So maybe do keep the faith for next year and
more in Dynasty than redraft. Yeah.
But this year it doesn't look like it's going to get much better. So going back to Dallas for a moment, let's assume that Lamb and Coop are not playing. Any of these receivers particularly stand out to you? Do you like a Cedric Wilson that you're going to use for a Thursday slate DFS or even a streaming option? Do you like Michael Gallup? That sort of thing.
Well, Wilson's interesting because he's been their main slot specialist, but even when they would have even when they would have a lot of like three wide stuff, there are a lot of times where they would go two tight end with Jarwin instead of Cedric Wilson. So even when somebody was missing time, when Gallup was missing time, like you'd have all these games where you'd look at the matchup for Cedric Wilson in the slot and be like, oh, this is such a good setup. And you'd think it could be maybe a big game for him, but then he'd end up playing only 25 snaps and Blake Jarwin and Dalton Schultz would both play over 45 snaps. But in this game, if CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper are both out, then Cedric Wilson might actually have to play that three down role. He might play 55, 60 snaps. Noah Brown, I think that he's the other guy, and he doesn't do anything, so I don't think he's a serious option. So yeah, they're down to basically Gallup and Cedric Wilson. I don't know who would be next after them, but Wilson has been pretty good with the targets that he's gotten. It's never been with like the bullseye on him. It's always been, you know, Cooper and Lamb, if not Cooper, Lamb and Gallup are all on the field, and Wilson kind of just gets open and he makes the play that he should, but we don't know if he's going to be able to kind of create separation when the defense is actually gunning for him. So if he's going against someone like Casey Hayward, I hate that matchup for him. I don't really like his chances there. And in the slot too, Nate Hobbs has been really good this year. I think last week was maybe his worst game, but he still had a really good year on the whole. So Wilson's opportunity level is way up, but I don't think the matchup is obviously great, if only because of Hayward and Hobbs.
And then, you know, we're looking at a shorthanded pass catching unit for the Cowboys, we saw how well the Bengals were able to run on the Raiders a week ago. Do we think that, that's something that the Cowboys try to explore here?
It almost has to be, because if especially if those two receivers are both out, I just can't see them running their usual offense, or rather their usual more aggressive passing offense with wide receiver personnel like this. So it's even at tight end, it's a little touch and go with Jarwin on IR. So it's a really thin group of route runners that they have, and they probably should try to keep it on the ground and sort of make this a quick game if they can.
Yeah, I think so too. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Zeke and Tony Pollard featured. I thought Pollard looked like one of the few bright spots for Dallas on Sunday. You know, the 7 carries for 50 yards, a couple of catches for 20 yards on top of that. So he seems to have some juice, and looked to me like Zeke is working through something. I don't know what exactly.
Well, yeah, he is hurt. So I think Pollard projects pretty well anyway in this matchup, but given that, and given the wide receiver injuries or illness injury, I would think this has to be the best on paper matchup for Pollard so far this year.
Okay. All right. I love that call. Let's get on to the nightcap for Thanksgiving. When we're all full and tired, we get one more serving. We get Bills, Saints. We get the Bills. Hard to know what to make of them right now. I mean, I think that the Jaguars game is still an anomaly, but I think that last week's game, I think things are starting to get a little bit troubling when it comes to Buffalo, and they have to go to New Orleans on Thanksgiving night. I don't know, man. This feels a little bit funky to me. If I'm backing the Bills, and they are 4-point road favorites, that to me feels like a decent amount of points, especially for a road team.
Right. So, I guess the full background here is I'm probably a tiny bit more skeptical of Josh Allen as of 2021 than most people, because I thought in that Ravens game that Martindale kind of showed everybody, the way you stop Josh Allen, if there is a way to stop him, sometimes he'll just have games where he's too good to be stopped, I guess. But the way, if you have a chance, is to just call zone coverages. Don't try to do man coverages, because if he figures out before the snap where all the coverage is, then he's pretty tough to stop. He'll be even accurate if he can know ahead of time where he needs to go, or at least if he knows the order of how things are going to unfold after the snap, he can hit some pretty, far downfield precise targets. But he becomes inaccurate when he has to scramble and has less time after the snap to figure everything out, or if he guesses wrong how something is unfolding. And it's easier to make mistakes when you're reading the defense if it's zones, and if you don't have guys moving before the snap with the motion that you set, and you don't have obvious man-to-man alignments that give away who's on who. So that Jags game was an anomaly. Like, I think, if they played 9 more times, we'd take the Bills to win all 9 of those probably. But the way that the Jags defense stopped them is just kind of a variation of what Martindale showed, only now they're running like basic cover 2 high stuff, and it's really causing a lot of problems for Allen. So if you're I don't know, I think Dable will come up with something, but it's the longer this goes on, and it's been going on for 3 weeks, I would say, that the Bills offense has been in a really bad spot after already being a little disappointing before the last 3 weeks earlier this year. It's getting to the point where I'm wondering if they just don't have the personnel to do more than this, if they need to, I don't know, go away from a Cole Beasley type slot receiver and more of like a big fast guy who at least like locks up one of those safeties, because as it is, like, Cole Beasley worked so well last year, but it's like if you put a safety over the top, you can kind of just like leave him alone, because you can always tackle him underneath. And I don't know, maybe they need somebody who can stress the seam a little bit more. It's like they don't really have a great downfield threat. Their main downfield threat is Gabriel Davis, and he runs like a 4-5-3, not to mention he only plays 20-25 snaps a game. So maybe they need to stretch the field a bit more to kind of deter defenses from lining up this exact way against Josh Allen as they do. Normally what you would do in this situation is just run the ball more, but I think, maybe the running backs aren't good enough, but the way I see it is it's just kind of difficult to run from the formations that they tend to call, because they call these formations to suit Josh Allen as a passer. And they're these pistol type looks that are just not that easy to play from if you're a running back. So I think they need to figure out an adjustment. And at this point in the year, I'm kind of getting worried that they just don't really have the time to do it.
Right. Yeah. That we are, getting close to December here, and that things just have not been trending particularly well for the Bills. It feels like the high water mark of their season was that rainy game out in Kansas City on that Sunday nighter. Do you think it was hubris of the Bills to go into this season with the likes of Singletary and Mossa as their top two?
I don't think so. I mean, I happen to think Moss, if healthy, is decent, and maybe he gets beat up too easily to be in that state as often as they need him to. But it's like they're getting decent enough returns from the ground game. It's just they can't really go to it that much. And the hits that they do get in the ground game, it's like every play feels like a draw almost. It's like they don't really have plays where they just bash you with the running back. They have just these kind of slow developing shotgun looking handoffs that, 20 years ago, you only ran plays like that when you were in third and 15, or you're just trying to run out the clock before a half ended or something like that. That's the only real run play that they have, or like their staple run play anyway. And I think it's just a bad structure to run from. Another thing they would maybe consider is kind of doing a change the way that the Eagles did in the middle of this year, where they opened the year playing more like the Buffalo Dable formations, like very spread out, never under center, kind of difficult to run from that look. So they barely tried. They'd have, one carry for Miles Sanders in the third quarter. Then they changed like 3 weeks ago, or whenever they called up Jordan Howard, they started running their offense a little differently. And they're saying like, fine, we're going to be bigger and more run heavy, and we're going to get the defense to make it easier for us to throw by throwing less and running more and making them take the run threat more seriously. It's like, they almost need to get that kind of, they need an epiphany like the Eagles had and become just different looking, I guess. Cause otherwise I feel like defenses have basically figured them out right now.
Get like Nick Sirianni. We've been saying it all along.
Shane Steichen. Shane Steichen is who we're giving credit for.
Okay. The Eagles. Good name there. Good pull. And then on the Saints side of things, obviously we were without Alvin Kamara for the second consecutive week last week. That wasn't a particularly good game that the Saints played up in Philly, but they're a different team at home and on a big stage. So I give them a puncher's chance, even if they're pretty hamstrung as far as what their personnel looks like.
Yeah. I don't know. I would pick the Bills to win and cover this. Sure. And I guess the reason is it's just, if Simeon has to play, it's not quite as bad as Tim Boyle, but Trevor Siemian is pretty, pretty bad. I don't think you can really compete in the NFL with him.
Yeah. It's a decent thing to base analysis off of when the quarterback is that far below what a replacement level quarterback looks like.
Bad Josh Allen is 10 times as good as good Trevor Siemian.
See, exactly. So good to keep that perspective, of course. Before we get on to the Sunday part of the slate, a quick message from our sponsors over at Blue Wire.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk. But it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Mario. On to Sunday. We got Jets, Texans, a battle of just sheer awesomeness here in the AFC. So we don't have to linger on this one too long. I know that Philip Lindsay was put on waivers shortly before we sat down to record this pod. Not sure how much that really shakes up this Tennessee offense. Tennessee obviously coming off of an impressive win. I'm sorry, Houston coming off the impressive win against Tennessee. Tennessee also lost to the Jets. So kind of weird, weird little wrinkle in this season. But how do you see this one shaking out?
I have no idea. The Texans barely seem like a real team. And the Jets, despite their problems, I feel like they're at least trying to be one. I don't even know if Houston cares enough. It feels like Houston's just kind of just trying to click simulate season like in Madden and then not think about any of this stuff. Go do something else until April or whatever. The Jets, I mean, I guess to be fair to Flacco, didn't really get much going until later in the game, if I remember right, but he played a pretty clean game. Could have gone worse against the Dolphins. I mean, it's not a great defense that they have, but it's easier for things to go wrong against the Dolphins than against the Texans. So it may be folly to think, what if Joe Flacco has two good games in a, or, you know, is you know, Joe Flacco's going to have two good games in a row. I kind of feel like he will though. And the Jets quietly on offense have a lot of really good threats from scrimmage all of a sudden. I mean, with Crowder and Davis are more steady than exciting, but Elijah Moore has been really hot for about a month now, and I don't really see any reason for that to stop. This is how good we had reason for we had reason to believe he was actually this good all along, and it was more so the first month or whenever his struggles were, those were disappointing. So it may feel like chasing points or something to think Elijah Moore maybe keeps this up, but I think we were both really high on him. So it's like I see numbers like the last 3 weeks, and I'm not particularly surprised. I don't feel the need to throw cold water on any of it. And him, Crowder, Davis, that's a lot to stop, even if you're a good defense, and the Texans aren't that.
No, they're certainly not. And yeah, Elijah Moore is someone who had that, you know, almost pristine prospect profile, really impressive stuff, you know, but the way that he produced his last couple seasons at Ole Miss, killer workout numbers. And yeah, I mean, all of his advanced metrics for this season, they're high into the green. The only thing that's kind of lagging behind is his catch rate,
which is a good sign.
Yes, exactly.
That's going to go up.
It's going to go up because he's proven that he has good hands. He did that at Ole Miss. And I think a lot of that can be attributed to probably seeing some trash targets from, you know, the combination of Zach Wilson and Mike White and Joe Flacco and Josh Johnson. So yeah, I don't really use that catch rate against him. He's been heating up of late, touchdowns in three straight games.
The air yards per snap is at 91st percentile, and I know it was not particularly high after the first 4 weeks. So yeah, he's raking, and it's a month now of high volume and highly efficient production from him.
We love it. But my best ball profile is very pleased. I have many notable misses from my best ball portfolio this year, but Moore, I don't think, is going to end up being one of them. So hopefully carry me over the cash line in a couple of spots. Let's keep things rolling. We got Bucks going to Indianapolis to face the Colts. Buccaneers, obviously, they won pretty comfortably in that Monday nighter. We saw Steve McClendon catch a pop fly interception from Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones throws the most just memeable interceptions. It's
really, I like him so much more than I thought I would back when he was a Duke prospect. Like we need more quarterbacks like him. Enough of these dreary, like boring failures. Like fail like Daniel Jones. Be a hero.
Go spectacularly, but like not
less Carson Wentz, more Daniel Jones. That's how I feel.
Amen. Absolutely. So anyway, speaking of Carson Wentz, they're going up against those Buccaneers. So this matchup, we have Indy 3-point home underdogs in this one. Buccaneers obviously just got off of a mini little schneid that they were on, you know, having lost to the Saints and the football team in recent weeks. So are you buying that the Bucs have kind of snapped out of their midseason slumber, or is this a legitimately tough matchup for them going on the road?
Well, it depends a lot on the health, I guess, of I didn't look. Carlton Davis didn't play yesterday, did he? Because he could be really close. And I didn't expect Sean Bunting Murphy to play yesterday, but he did. So if they get Carlton Davis back too, that's all three of their top three corners. And it takes them from a bad secondary to all of a sudden a very good one. Not just that, but do you know what the deal with Vita Vea is? Does he have like a long term? So
he was close to playing. They said on the broadcast last night they showed him doing some warm ups beforehand before they had to announce the inactives. So he's pushing. Like he might be pretty close.
Yeah. So if Vita Vea and Carlton Davis join this defense, they go from decent to exactly as good as they were last year. And we expected them to be kind of more like a top five defense this year than the middling one they've been. It's almost entirely due to especially Carlton Davis's injury. He's been out for a long time by now. So him, Bunting Murphy, Vita Vea, that would change the line, or it should, if they're all in. So I don't know whether this 2.5 assumes anything in particular with those guys. But if Vita Vea is back, that would be the worst thing for the Colts, because Jonathan Taylor, he obviously looks insane. But I think Vita Vea Tampa Bay defense is tougher against the run than the Buffalo run defense that Taylor just annihilated. Like I was surprised at the volume of touchdowns, just because that seems improbable.
Yeah, but you only see one or two of those type of performances a year, maybe.
Yeah, but the front that Taylor did well from scrimmage was not that surprising. I mean, the Bills run defense wasn't particularly well tested. They got lit up by Derrick Henry earlier this year, despite having good numbers overall. So Tampa Bay with Vita Vea, though, that would be surprising to me if Taylor – it would be very impressive if Taylor could get going against that particular defense.
So some quick breaking news here. Text from my inside source, a.k.a. my dad, who's watching ESPN right now. Andy Dalton was just named the starter for Thursday.
Why is he not watching the stream?
I hope he's got it pulled up on his phone. Otherwise, you know, he's a real traitor for that.
But yeah, Dalton, I assume, who cares? As long as they aren't starting Tim Boyle themselves, I think they'll win that one.
All right, so Tim Boyle clones. Let's see it happen. Let's not. Okay, so rounding out your point on Taylor versus this run defense. So is this something where you'll be looking out for that injury report on Tampa Bay, that list of inactives that comes out an hour and a half before kick to kind of make your full decision?
Yeah, because if they don't have Vita Vea, the Tampa Bay run defense isn't bad in that case, far from it, but you do need a very good run defense to stop Jonathan Taylor. And just the same, or you know, the other side of that is if you're the Colts and Taylor can't win this game for you, you can't win this game. So okay. I think, it comes down to that, both for, the fantasy implications of Taylor, but also the question of whether the Colts can realistically compete. Because if it's just Tom Brady versus Carson Wentz, that's not a real game.
Yeah, we know how that would end up. And then on the Bucs side, what did you make of Gronk's return last night and you know, how that sets up against this Indianapolis defense?
Seems like they took enough time to let him get truly 100%. And before he had the no practice on Friday or Saturday, whatever it was, he practiced fully before that. And if you look at their injury report, the last day before a game, their last practice, I should say, they often give guys like Ndamukong Suh the day off. And so it was like, man, unless there was a really nasty setback that looked like just a veteran rest day. And I think his usage against the Giants and his effectiveness against the Giants seemed to make that pretty clear. Like he's ready to go. And hopefully he stays healthy this time, because he could rake pretty much the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think so too. He looked pretty awesome last night. So hopefully that's able to continue. But yeah, this I kind of have circled it as one of the better games of the Sunday slate. Very, very much looking forward to that one. Before we get things moving further, we got a message from our friends over at WinBet. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions. And even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WinBet brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in six states. That's Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's W-Y-N-N-B-E-T. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. We also get a message from our friends over at Yahoo. The NFL season is heating up, and Yahoo is going big on daily fantasy football this season. There will be a ton of big prize contests throughout the year on Yahoo, including their multi-entry contest now being shark-free. To celebrate Yahoo going big on DFS as well as Yahoo Daily Fantasy becoming shark-free, Yahoo is giving all users the opportunity to claim free $10 in site credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 in site credit to offer any paid contest, including Yahoo's biggest contest, the $1 million DFS NFL Baller Contest. The weekly $1 million contest features $1 million in total prizes, including first place receiving $100,000 in tons of overlay and prizes, in addition to that first place winning $100,000. Play daily fantasy football on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim the free $10 offer to get started. All right, Mario, pushing forward. We got Giants, Eagles. Eagles playing well, playing really well of late. From earlier in the season where they looked like they were kind of this identity-less team that was going to fall off a cliff any moment, they've really gotten things rolling. Kind of started with their rout of the Lions. Of course, the Lions had plenty to do with that as well, but they took care of business against them nonetheless in a way that certainly not the Browns or the Steelers were unable to do. Just kind of steamrolling them. They go out to Denver, they beat the Broncos, they go ahead and beat the Saints convincingly this past weekend. Jalen Hurts has a huge game, especially on the ground. So things are clicking when it comes to the Eagles offensively right now. And that I think was kind of the big question coming into the season and after the first month or so of the season. But how do you view this game going up against a Giants team that is relatively talented on paper, but certainly just reeling right now and just snake bitten by the constant mistakes that Daniel Jones and company tend to make.
Yeah, and it sounds like Joe Judge is making everything worse. There's no way that team takes him seriously. So all the players are professionals. You know, they're not gonna just like boycott the game. But the Eagles are probably going to be focused, and they're gonna play hard, and they're sincerely in it, you know? So I would think the Giants are at a pretty big disadvantage, if only for the circumstances, even though they're at home. And one thing that I think is actually really good about the Eagles offense lately is like we were talking about with the Bills, I think the Eagles pretty clearly at looks like it was maybe week 7, week 6, something like that. Week 8 against week 8 against the Lions when he threw 14 passes. The Eagles stopped throwing as much from as widespread of formations, and they started running more, and specifically running more with the power element of Jordan Howard, which they did not have in the offense before. It was a position that didn't play in those first 6 weeks or whatever. So they've lightened their pass attempt volume. They've allowed Jalen Hurts to run more while not just passing less, he's running more too, and they're running more with other guys and specifically in a power element. So that makes it easier for Hurts because he doesn't need to be exposed as a passer as much. And when he does need to throw, the defense is more worried about the run than they were in those first month, the first 4 weeks or so. So I was concerned about Jalen Hurts as a starter, and I still don't believe he's a good passer or anything close to it. But this particular way of running the offense, I do think can work. And this is, if I had known that they would do this specifically, I would have been more comfortable with Hurts, because I don't see why he will make mistakes being utilized like this. And that was a really good Saints defense that that worked against, even though he didn't throw for very much, didn't throw for very well. So they do need a competent defense to be a winning team with this approach. I happen to think that it's worth considering building a team that way with the out of control quarterback costs and just the futility sometimes of trying to pursue a really good passer in the draft and in free agencies. Like sometimes you can't do it. Sometimes it makes more sense to take a guy like Hurts who maybe can't throw the ball, but can run, and then use your savings to get a better defense. And if you can lean on the defense a bit, like they could last week, they get really tough all of a sudden because they don't need to expose Hurts as a passer, and he's dangerous as a runner and when he can play comfortably at quarterback. So I do think playing Simeon made it a little easier, and also the Saints offensive line was really beat up. I do worry about Hurts in games where the Eagles defense can't play well and they maybe are forced to pass. But against the Giants, that doesn't really apply. So he might not need to throw or run that much, depending on how bad the Giants are. But I think the Eagles should take care of business pretty comfortably here.
So speaking of the Giants and their offense, more breaking news. What a show we're having. Jason Garrett just got fired, man.
Yeah, see, like that's ridiculous because obviously Jason Garrett is not good. But the issue is Joe Judge is just looking for a scapegoat. Like this Jason Garrett is not singularly responsible enough for the things wrong with the Giants for firing him to fix anything.
So this is moving the deck chairs on the Titanic type of deal.
This is a child throwing a fit. Joe Judge is a baby and he's throwing a fit and he's not convincing anybody. I guarantee you that team thinks he's a joke. They resent him. They want this season to be over. And if Nagy's gone after Thursday, I wouldn't be surprised if Joe is gone after Monday.
Yeah, this division loss too, and one that could get, you know, ugly potentially. I think that things could certainly trend in that direction. I guess one more quick bit of insight from you before we move off the Giants. How'd you think Saquon looked in his return?
Sorry, I did not watch the Saquon plays. I was just kind of following on Twitter and watching the big plays. But looking at the numbers, it's not great. I suppose he probably wasn't fully healthy. And even if he was, I guess they were trying to ease him in a little bit. But Vita Vey was not playing in that game. So doing nothing on the ground, doing not a whole lot as a pass catcher. I don't know. I guess Jones was playing so bad. Maybe Barkley didn't really have a chance as a pass catcher, but I don't think Barkley was particularly convincing.
Yeah. Yeah. That wasn't like the most, I mean, it was going to be a tough,
I do worry about him in a bad offense. I mean, we've talked about this before. He's an incredible athlete and he's a really good pass catcher, but if your offense sucks and you don't have good blocking, I'm not confident in his ability to see out of the backfield like a guy like Chubb or Taylor. I feel like he needs the space, and if you don't have a quarterback who can throw, he can't get going as a pass catcher either, so it's kind of concerning.
Yeah, no, it 100% is. Let's keep rolling. Panthers going to Miami to face the Dolphins. We got the Dolphins as 2-point home underdogs. So that's some respect to a potentially resurgent Panthers, although that obviously coming off the loss this past Sunday. So where are you on this one? I have a hard time getting a read on either of these teams.
Yeah. So I like, or, you know, I thought Phil Snow did a good job most of this year, but he got destroyed by Scott Turner of all people last week. So that's pretty concerning. The Washington offense has some really good players. Like McLaurin's obviously great. And I actually like Heinicke a little bit as like a, you know, 20th best quarterback kind of guy. But for Carolina's defense with a substantial amount of talent, it's not like they were just kind of getting by on scheme when they were doing well. It's like that pass rush is really dangerous. And they got some speed at linebacker, some speed in the secondary. They've added Gilmore, and yet the defense was just a mess against Washington. So I don't want to assume that they'll bounce back here. It's possible that Turner found some flaw and maybe Miami can find it and exploit it too. But I'm really skeptical. Their co-offensive coordinator thing that Miami is doing is just such a bad idea. And the two people that are involved with it, incidentally, are also not good at their jobs anyway. So everything is disjointed about the Miami offense. And not that the Washington offense was doing much better before last week, but I just can't see, like, I don't see the Terry McLaurin type of dominance from Jalen Waddle. Not that Waddle won't be great at some point, and he's really good now, obviously. But Terry McLaurin, I think, if someone really wanted to argue that he's the best receiver in the league, I wouldn't really put up a fight against it. It's like I don't personally think that, but he's so incredibly good. I don't feel like arguing against it. And I just think Phil Snow probably bounces back. The Carolina pass rush, especially, could be a problem for a Miami offensive line. That's a joke. The Carolina offensive line is a joke too, but Miami doesn't have any front seven guys really. Jalen Phillips, I guess, but that's it.
Right, exactly. And you know, he's just a rookie. He's not quite at game wrecker level just yet. What do you make of Tua's performance of late?
I cannot figure out what I think about that guy. You know,
neither can I.
It looks bad, but everything looks bad. Kind of like non-negotiably. Like I watch that offense and I say like, that didn't look good, but I can't watch it and convince myself that it would have gone any better with a different quarterback. Really? Maybe it would. I definitely don't have any confidence at this point that Tua is good, but I also don't know how much he really bears responsibility for this atrocious team. I think it starts at the top with Stephen Ross, and he's the owner or main owner anyway. And, yeah, it feels like everything is just disjointed and just poorly run with that team. And I don't even know if Flores wants to be there anymore. So I don't expect it to get better. I think Carolina can at least do some things well, and Miami basically does nothing well.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty nicely. So it's not like Tua's getting all the breaks as far as
the offensive line is so bad. It's incredible how bad their offensive line is, especially given the draft picks that they've put into it. It's almost impressive.
But Robert Hunt made that cool play where he caught where he thought the screen was for him.
I really appreciate him doing that, because it was like the most human and like, you know, inspiring thing you could do. So he was just like having that epiphany in the middle of the play, just like, this season sucks, this team sucks, I'm gonna do something, you know, worthwhile for the first time all year.
Yeah, that was that was an amazing moment.
Every other play for them sucks, however.
It does. And then on the Ravens end of that, as a man who's not large in stature, I was thoroughly impressed by I think it was maybe Brandon Stevens. It might have been like Tavon Young, just absolutely like missling a 300-pound man and sending him flipping through the air. I felt inspired by that particular moment in its own right. But we got plenty of games to get to, so let's keep things rolling. I digress. Sorry about that. Patriots Titans, maybe the game of the week for the AFC. The Patriots obviously playing extremely well, it seems like. Titans coming off a big head scratcher, but I think similar to the Bills and their loss to the Jaguars earlier, I think that, you know, that can be somewhat forgiven. But this is a Titans team that I think we were kind of realized on Sunday in a tangible way how thin of a line that they're walking with how banged up their like star players on offense are. I mean, you're already operating without Derrick Henry, and you know, if you lose AJ Brown in addition to Julio Jones, there might just not be enough that they can muster up.
Right. What I'm trying to pull up their injury reports. Was there, so
Brown hurt his hand right off the bat, and then I believe he hurt his chest.
Okay. So yeah, it's tough for me. Like if they had Henry, I would say 6.5 points is too much. And if they had just AJ Brown, I might say 6.5 is too much. If they don't have him and they don't have Julio, that's, I don't know. That's just maybe too much at once. So on the one hand, I do think people are overrating the Patriots offense. It's actually getting really annoying. Watching all this stuff about, oh, Mac Jones is, you know, the best, whatever. He's just the best quarterback. Why tap the brakes enough to say rookie, best rookie? Like, no, he's just one of the best quarterbacks right now. It's like, he's doing a good job and he doesn't have that good of receivers to work with, but he's playing a game like Alex Smith could play. Like this team would not look a even single bit different with Alex Smith, prime Alex Smith, not, you know, busted leg Alex Smith. But that's good. There's a place in the league for quarterbacks like that. And I happen to believe Jones will be better than that, especially when he gets better receivers to work with. But right now they're just a check down offense that gets by on good field positioning and a run game that's just good enough to capitalize on their good field positioning, which is perfectly fine to win. It's like they're a good team right now. And the Titans, being as shorthanded as they are, probably should be considered the underdogs. 6 points just feels kind of like a lot. It feels like a Tannehill meltdown kind of thing, which is totally in play. I don't think Tannehill's particularly good.
Yeah. So this is a tricky one to figure out. I think I probably would defer to the Patriots in this one.
Their defense is playing really well.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, when you have a guy who's can be mistake prone like Tannehill can against a really opportunistic defense, and not just like, I'm not saying that the Patriots are only opportunistic because of the way they played against the Falcons a week ago and picked off everything that those backup quarterbacks threw. I think that they could seriously kind of flip the game, and you know, this sets up to play right into the hands of what the Patriots 2021 formula is, where it's just like play possession, play good defense, don't turn it over yourself, and get out with the win. And they seem to be kind of mastering that right now. And in an AFC that is kind of up for grabs now, the Patriots have kind of asserted themselves into that conversation as to being one of the more dangerous teams in the conference. And they can really further establish that this week if they're able to win and, as the Vegas odds imply, win rather convincingly against the Titans.
Yeah, the more I think about it, I do think Tannehill completely falls apart here.
Okay, good bet. Good bet like that. Let's go Steelers-Bengals. We got the Bengals 4-point home favorites. Bengals bounced back, coming off the bye last week, looked good against the Raiders. Joe Mixon ran all over the Raiders. Do we see that is like the start of a new philosophy for the Bengals, or is that them exploiting a matchup?
I do think the Raiders are more vulnerable on the ground than through the air. And if you're running the ball, you don't have to worry about Joe Burrow getting hit by Max Crosby or Yannick Ngakoue. So I think it made sense to approach it that way. And, you know, the results kind of spoke for themselves, I think. So I would say the run game like that is on the table, but it's something that they don't need to do. They can definitely throw the ball more. And I think especially if they feel like they can handle the pass rush. So in this case, I guess it comes down to whether TJ Watt's playing, and if I guess Fitzpatrick missed that last game because of COVID list, right? So he's going to be back, or he should be anyway. So yeah, TJ Watt, if he's out, I guess I like the chances of the Bengals throwing quite a bit more. But if he's in, yeah, they can probably lean on their defense and mix in and still get the win here.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, the Steelers played in kind of like a Big 12 style of game on Sunday night. I don't like their chances of doing that again and competing this Sunday against the Bengals. The Chargers are just a team that has the proclivity to just get into very weird games and never put teams away, even when they should. You know, they get a punt blocked and all this and that to really let Pittsburgh back into that one.
Yeah, that didn't seem very close.
No. Yeah, I like the Bengals in this spot as well. Let's get on over Jaguars, Falcons. Your thoughts?
Not good. I don't know. I guess Kyle Pitts will go as Matt Ryan does, and maybe Matt Ryan can go a little bit here, but it's not a given. The Jags defense has been playing pretty decent for, I don't know, a month or so. However, I don't think their offense can get going. It sounds like things are really, really bad there. Like, Urban Meyer is not just a bad coach and a moron and a bad person, but he also sounds like an extremely lazy guy who basically like doesn't do anything but kind of get in the way of what other coaches are trying to do, just to say like, actually, I think we should do this instead. And then he, you know, goes to lunch, and it's like Bavell can't run the offense, and he's not really running it. It's like just this mangled thing where Bavell's going through the motions and Meyer's kind of just being a weird tyrant, like an ineffectual, like indifferent tyrant. Like it's weird. He wants the control and doesn't really want to do anything either. So they can't play. The Falcons, you know, they have no talent, but at least I think they are better enough on offense than the Jags are that they should be able to win, even though they're terrible too.
Yeah, it's a mess for Jacksonville. I mean, to get boat raised by San Francisco that way. Maybe I need to reconsider my San Francisco position, but I think that a game like last weekend said a little bit more about Jacksonville than San Francisco. So awful stuff there. And then, the Falcons just don't really have the talent, like you mentioned. That's just a non-serious group of starters on both sides of the ball. So that this will be a rock fight. This is one that where you have the Falcons 1-point favorites on the road here. And that wouldn't make it, if I'm in the super contest, I wouldn't make it in my top five for bets that I'm going to put down. That's for certain. Let's head out to the AFC West. We got the Chargers going up against the Broncos. Broncos off the bye. Chargers off the exciting Sunday night win over the Steelers. Chargers 2.5-point road favorites. What say you?
I don't want to pick Denver just because I don't really want to pick against Justin Herbert, but I do think Herbert has to do too much as a general rule with that team. And I think that fact leaves them vulnerable to letdowns because sometimes, Herbert just can't do every single thing himself. And he gets kind of let down by other aspects of the team too often. It's like, when I look at this Chargers defense versus the Denver offense, I don't really see anything intimidating for the Denver offense. So if Justin Herbert has to kind of play 10 on 11 all the time on offense, and if the Chargers defense doesn't have something on the Denver offense, I like Denver more actually, but that's just kind of because I think they should be able to run more consistently, like kind of just get first downs more easily and develop a field positioning advantage over the course of the game. Cause I don't know. It's just, it feels like Herbert has had easier layups than this that have gone wrong this year.
No, he absolutely has. It's been a clunky season, but hopefully I think last weekend's game, even against a shorthanded Steelers defense, I think could be a sign of things to come for the Chargers the rest of the way, and that they could potentially live up to those lofty preseason expectations. Let's go. We got a huge game here up in your neck of the woods. We got the Rams and the Packers, but before then, a quick message from our friends over at Thrive. Thrive is back for another season of fantasy football, and they're running huge guaranteed contests each week this NFL season. With Thrive Fantasy, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus only on the top-tier athletes that have the biggest impact on the game. Sign up today and get a free six-month RotoWire subscription. Here's how you claim that free RotoWire subscription. One, visit rotowire.com/thrive. Two, deposit a minimum of $10 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $100. And three, play in your first paid contest and receive a free six-month RotoWire subscription. So again, head on over to rotowire.com/thrive for some more details on that. Mario, again, let's keep things rolling. We got Rams, Packers up in Green Bay. Rams coming off of the bye week. They obviously have made a bunch of high-profile moves in recent weeks to bolster them for a Super Bowl run, and then they've not played well since doing them. Of course, I think the game against the 49ers was particularly surprising to me. I guess it is a divisional opponent. Shanahan does seem to have some sort of edge over McVay. How do you think that they fare going into this game? How do you think they use the bye to get Beckham involved in the offense, especially with no Robert Woods?
Yeah, Matt Stafford needs to play better either way. And I know there's sometimes things just go wrong for no real reason, and they tend to even out over time when you have a quarterback as good as Stafford. But he's looked just bad for about a month, I feel like. And if he keeps looking like that, Beckham and no other receivers in particular can really save him from that low quality of play. So a little worried about Stafford. If Stafford can have a certain level of play, then I like the Rams a bit more, I guess, just because I don't take the Packers defense that seriously beyond, I guess, like the safeties are pretty good and they got a good Kenny Clark and Gary are a good lineman combo, but just feels like the Rams with a week to work with Beckham and Miller, it's like they're going to come out looking a little differently, I would think. And I know Rodgers played well last week, but if he's dealing with some toe problem, I don't know. It's if Stafford plays bad, I guess if Stafford keeps playing like he has, I should say, then the Packers win. But if Stafford plays like he did in the first month or whatever, I think I like the Rams.
Definitely fair. I'm really, really looking forward to that one. Let's keep things rolling. We got Vikings, Niners. Just real quick, your 30-second thousand-yard view on this particular matchup.
Vikings secondary isn't very good, so could be another good spot for Garoppolo, especially since there's no Danielle Hunter in the pass rush. So I feel like San Francisco's defense is a lot better than Minnesota's, and they are warranted 3-point favorites.
That makes sense. I'm starting to buy in on this Niners team a little bit more. I think that this is a matchup between two teams who are sneaky, I don't think that you can fully trust ever a Kirk Cousins led team, but there's a little bit of something to Minnesota in the way they've been playing these teams in all these close games this year, having a 7-point lead, I believe, in every single game this season. That says a little bit of something. And then let's see if we got time for these last two primetime games. Mario, I'm going to be at this one. Ravens, Browns, in the big crab cake. What am I going to see?
Well, hopefully Lamar can play, and hopefully if he does, Joe Woods, the Cleveland defensive coordinator, plays a lot of man coverage, because if the Ravens need to get something going against basic zone coverages, Greg Roman will basically sabotage the entire offense, which they won't be able to afford with Nick Chubb on the other side. Like, Baker Mayfield's a joke, and it is funny how that's going right now, but Ravens defense can't deal with Chubb if they keep putting the defense on the field too long.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got it. The worlds are colliding right now. So a likely replacement for Jason Garrett, Freddie Kitchens.
Oh, that should fix it.
That world's colliding.
I bet they're really good now.
Yeah, that will fix everything. But no, to your point, the Ravens give up way too many big plays. Their defense not nearly as good as it's been in recent years. If Brandon Williams is out, then I don't think that they have a ton of success stopping Nick Chubb. And if the Browns get healthier along the offensive line and also get Kareem Hunt back, then this could be a high scoring game, higher scoring than you would anticipate. And then of course, Baltimore absolutely needs Lamar on their side. If this is going to be a real game, they don't get to play the Bears every single week to be able to win with Tyler Huntley. But that's going to wrap things up, Mario, for this edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Again, for Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. Thanks for listening once again. And again, our podcast brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.